You're listening to PetLifeRadio.com.
The Pet Doctor is brought to you by Dog.com. For everything and anything dog, shop Dog.com today for all the top brands. Greenies, Frontline, Kong, Nylabone, Royal Canin, and more. Shop at Dog.com and use the promo code SADDOC, S-A-D-D-O-C, and get $15 off your order of $75 or more.
Is your pet stressed out? Does your pet need annual vaccines? Which pet is best for a child? Would you know if your dog was in pain? Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor, where you'll learn everything about keeping your pet healthy and happy. From pet care, pet meds and grooming, to pet food, pet insurance and dental care, this is the place to find out everything there is to know about pet wellness. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets, because it's your pet. Health matters. Please welcome your Pet Doctor host, veterinary media consultant and veterinarian, Dr. Bernadine Cruz.
We've all heard of pets that have weaseled their way into our homes and hearts, and how the loss of a pet can leave us heartbroken. But were you aware that dogs and cats can suffer with many of the same cardiac, heart conditions that plague their owners? There's a very unique and specialized team of veterinary medical professionals who are advancing the knowledge and treatment options that are saving the lives of pets and, hopefully in the future, the people who care for them. My guest today is Dr. Lee Griffiths, who leads the Open Heart Surgery Program at the William R. Pritchard Veterinary Medical Teaching Hospital at Davis, California. We'll be right back to hear about this fascinating information.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
Isn't anything we won't do to make sure they're getting the best products and the best care. So when you ask us a question like,
"So how do you feel about cat condos?"
we can say from experience,
"Feels like home for her."
Enter the code DOCTOR10, D-O-C-T-O-R, the number 10, and get 10% off any order. No minimum at Petco.com.
There's a movement afoot. ShoeBuy.com. Join the millions of people who shop ShoeBuy.com's over 400 brands and 500,000 products. Order now and get free shipping and free return shipping. ShoeBuy.com, the world's greatest shoe store.
Walk your dog in style and comfort. Enter the code DOCTOR, D-O-C-T-O-R, at checkout and get a 10% discount plus free shipping at ShoeBuy.com.
Celebrate your special occasion and give her this classic semi-eternity band created with 1-carat brilliant diamonds, channel set in 14-carat white gold. Exclusively yours from ICE.com. Free shipping over $150, free returns, and 30-day money-back guarantee.
Go to ICE.com and use promo code ACTFP and get 20% off your purchase. Or use promo code ADTFP and get 20% off at Diamond.com. ICE.com or Diamond.com. Get 20% off from Pet Life Radio.
This year, Americans are expected to spend a jaw-dropping $36 billion on their pets. From lighted leashes to high-end spa products, the discriminating pet owner can find just about anything to pamper his or her pet. Hi, this is Michelle Fern. Join me every week for Best Bets for Pets, where we'll talk about the latest pet products and talk to the companies that make them. Best Bets for Pets, every week, only on PetLifeRadio.com.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com. Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio with Dr. Bernadine Cruz. The doctor is in, and we'll see you now.
Dr. Griffith, thank you so much for being with us today.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be here.
Well, I'm somewhat prejudiced because I'm a graduate of UC Davis School of Veterinary Medicine, so I think you are at one of the premier veterinary colleges in the United States, maybe even the world. But this is absolutely fascinating. How common is cardiac problems in dogs and cats?
Well, cardiac disease in general is the second most common disease that we see in small animals, particularly in dogs. So cancer still is probably slightly more common, but cardiac disease is certainly a very important cause of both problems in patients and, unfortunately, ultimately their death frequently.
Now, I seem to notice more cases of dogs with heart problems than cats with heart problems. Would you say that's kind of across the board a typical thing, or is it just my practice?
I think it's more potentially a perception thing. The diseases that cats get, are very different than the diseases that dogs tend to get. And so, actually, if you look at the prevalence data, the frequency with which dogs and cats have heart disease, cats are actually have highly prevalent disease. The good news, however, for cats is that their most common disease is a disease called hypertrophic cardiomyopathy. And that disease, they tend to live pretty well with for very protracted long periods of time. Whereas with dogs, the old age diseases that we see in dogs are much more dramatic because, you know, the two big ones there would be valvular heart disease or a disease of large breed dogs called dilated cardiomyopathy. And both of those tend to have much more rapid courses of disease and lead to the ultimate death of the patient much more quickly.
With all of the various specialties in veterinary medicine, from cancer to old age to internal medicine, how did you get interested in concentrating on heart disease in animals?
That's an interesting question. I trained as a surgeon. And in England, the way that we do our surgical training is that we specialize either as orthopedic surgeons, meaning you do everything to do with the skeleton and the joints, or as what's called soft tissue surgeons, where you do surgery on basically all of the other organs of the body. And I was lucky enough to do my training in Glasgow, which, unbeknownst to me at the time, is the European capital of heart disease in humans, probably because of the diet that people in Glasgow eat.
I think I don't want to move to Glasgow. That doesn't sound very good for your long-term health.
No, not particularly. But if you're a human cardiac surgeon, you actually do want to move to Glasgow. So it turns out that many of the best cardiac surgeons in Europe end up working in Glasgow at some point in their career because they just see so many patients that way. So I got to know, I had an interest anyway in chest surgery in general, and got to know some of the human cardiac surgeons in Glasgow and started working with them while I was in my residency. And that really, you know, ignited my interest in cardiac surgery. I remember that the first time I ever saw cardiopulmonary bypass, which is more colloquially called what we call open heart surgery, first time I saw that in a person, I just thought that it was one of the wonders of the world that you can stop the heart, open it up, do surgery inside the heart, and then nature is so amazing that as soon as you put blood back into the heart, it just is designed to pump blood and to work, and quite frequently, we don't even have to do anything to encourage the heart to do that at the end of the procedure. As soon as we put the blood back in the heart, it just starts beating again. Which, you know, is just fascinating to me that nature is so well designed that the heart just knows its job and wants to do it.
You know, we watch movies and television shows and you see these heart-lung machines and taking all the blood out and them doing what they have to do. And I remember when I was at UC Davis, at that time we were doing surgery on dogs that were from the shelter that were going to be euthanized. So thankfully they offered their lives that we could learn how to do surgical procedures, because not everything can be done on a computer. And I remember one of the procedures was putting a patch on the heart. Mm-hmm. And it was one of the most frustrating things because it kept moving. And it's like, how do you put a stitch in this thing? It was just extremely frustrating. So I can see where stopping it for a while can be helpful. How long can you stop a heart?
So we try and keep most of the procedures for the actual portion where the heart is stopped. We try to keep that down to somewhere between an hour to an hour and a half. You can go longer than that, but it becomes more and more difficult to stabilize the patient afterwards and restart the heart afterwards. But, you know, anywhere up to probably 2 hours is, you know, absolutely fine usually.
Now, you've been talking about doing open heart surgery on dogs, and you said that cats didn't get many of the same diseases. Is a procedure like that, if it was necessary, can you do it on a cat, or are they too small?
Well, it's not necessarily just a size issue. We certainly do small dogs, and there's also a group in Japan that frequently does incredibly small dogs, mostly because their population live in such crowded situations, I guess, that small dogs are really popular over there. So it's not just a size issue. The big problems with cats is that cats are notorious for having extremely good clotting mechanisms for their blood. And one of the things that you have to deal with when you put the patient on the bypass machine is preventing the blood from clotting in all of the tubing of the machine. That experimentally has been shown to be possible in cats, but it's an awful lot more difficult to prevent the blood from clotting than it is in dogs or humans. And so, as far as I'm aware, nobody is doing clinical cases of open heart surgery in cats. And, you know, as I already said, it's kind of fortunate that we don't really see many diseases in cats that would require open heart repair anyway.
Good. Before you get to the point where you realize an animal needs some type of heart surgery, what are some of the other, number one, how would a pet owner realize, my pet is having a heart issue? What would be some of the common signs, cat or dog?
So the most common signs that we see patients for are either you just go to your referring vet for your yearly checkup and vaccinations, and the vet hears a murmur. That's actually one common reason for us to have patients referred. The other, in terms of the owner actually noticing something wrong with their pet, then the things that we see there are the pet not wanting to exercise as much as usual, or developing signs of what's called congestive heart failure. And those most commonly present as either coughing, difficulty breathing, very rapid breathing, and just obvious distress. Most of the dogs don't want to lay down, because basically what's happening with congestive heart failure, if we're talking about the left side of the heart, is that fluid is building up behind the left side of the heart because it's not pumping well. And that, although the blood itself stays in the blood vessels, the liquid part of the blood, the water in the blood, actually leaks out into the surrounding tissue. And the thing that's directly behind the left side of the heart is the lung. And so essentially, if you go into left-sided heart failure, you are drowning internally. And so it's a very dramatic set of clinical signs. It's, you know, it's not like owners have to worry that if their dog coughs once that it may be congestive heart failure. If you imagine, you know, seeing on the TV someone who's, you know, simulating that they've drowned, they cough persistently. It's, you know, very obvious coughing that is not going to go away unless treated by a veterinarian. Now, the good news is that most of the time, if that happens, as long as the client gets the dog to the veterinarian pretty much immediately, it is an emergency situation, because you will die of it if we don't do something. But as long as the client gets the dog to a veterinarian, what we can do as veterinarians is give drugs that basically make you remove, make your kidneys remove water from your bloodstream. And that allows the fluid that leaked out into the lungs to now come back into the bloodstream to replace the fluid that the kidneys just removed. And so that's done using a set of drugs called diuretics. And as long as that's done quickly, most dogs can survive their initial presentation for heart failure. What it means, though, is that you're then dependent on those drugs for the rest of your life.
What is the typical age that a pet owner would suspect, okay, this is maybe just a little cough because the dog got some dirt in its, you know, airways, or, gee, you know, this could be something more serious?
So that actually depends. In terms of the dogs that get referred to us, we see basically two populations. The first population are young dogs with what's called congenital heart disease, meaning they were born with it. And most of those dogs we actually see because the veterinarian does a good job and recognizes that the dog has a heart murmur. So it's less common for the young dogs to actually present because they go into heart failure. Now, therefore, the other portion of the population of dogs that we see are the older dogs with the old age degenerative changes of their heart. And those are the ones that more frequently present, either because of slowing down and having exercise intolerance or actually developing signs of heart failure.
So it really is a very good idea to get your pet in twice a year, especially when it starts becoming that more mature pet, say older than about 7. And Dr. Griffith, would you agree that just because a veterinarian hears a heart murmur, that does not necessarily mean, that's a death warrant for this particular pet?
No, and that's actually also the good news of heart disease for most of our patients. Many of the dogs or cats that are diagnosed with murmurs actually go on to live the entire rest of their life without the heart disease ever progressing to the point that it shortens their life expectancy. So, you know, it's always, having information is always good, so you should definitely go to your vet, get your dog looked at frequently. You know, if the vet picks up a murmur, then that's not necessarily the end of the world. We just, you know, it just gives us information. We can find out why the murmur is there and what does it mean, if anything, to your pet at that point. And many times, all that we end up doing is monitoring, you know, does the heart change over time? And as I said, the good news is that for many dogs, they never develop significant heart disease, even though they have a murmur.
One of the things I'll many times tell my own clients after I've said, okay, it has a heart murmur, it's not very loud, I will typically grade it 1 through 6. I tell them 1 is very mild, 6 the kind that you hear across the room without a stethoscope is, buy yourself a stethoscope. It doesn't have to be very expensive. You don't even have to know what you're listening to, but get used to listening to your pet's heart and lungs. And if all of a sudden it sounds different, the pet is acting differently, maybe coughing more, you look at its gums and they don't look nice and pink, that's the time to make sure you get it into either myself or an emergency clinic if it's in the middle of the night. So heart murmur definitely doesn't have to be something they have to be totally concerned with, but they do need to monitor.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, the most important part of that is to know what to look for if it is, you know, signs of congestive heart failure, because those patients need to be seen as an emergency, and it's not something that can wait till the next day, or, you know, you shouldn't sit around and wait till the morning. If it's 2 a.m. and, you know, your dog is suddenly coughing incessantly and having breathing difficulties, then you need to go to an emergency veterinarian straight away.
Great information that I'm getting right now, that we're all getting right now from Dr. Lee Griffiths. He is a cardiac specialist at UC Davis School of Veterinary Medicine. We'll be right back and he'll be telling us about his open heart surgery program and the team of some very specialized folks. We'll be right back.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
Love your pets but wish their medications were a lot less expensive? They are at 1-800-PetMeds. You'll not only save on flea and heartworm medications, but on prescriptions for arthritis, incontinence, thyroid, and more. And you get fast service, free shipping, and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Plus, our licensed pharmacists ensure accuracy, monitor drug interaction, and more. See why over 5 million people have trusted their pet's health to 1-800-PetMeds, America's largest pet pharmacy. Call now or order online.
Go to PetMeds.com/doctor, D-O-C-T-O-R, to get 10% off any order and free shipping on orders of $39 or more at PetMeds.com.
FTD's network of over 40,000 florists around the world have been creating beautiful handcrafted arrangements for 100 years. Each arrangement is delivered the same day and backed by FTD's 7-day satisfaction guarantee. For a century, people have trusted their most important occasions to the flower experts at FTD.
Since Pet Life Radio is all about puppy dogs and flowers, our listeners, that's you, can get a 20% discount on your order. Just go to florop.com and use the code DR20 at checkout. FLEUROP.com, code word DOCTOR and the number 20.
You ask the question, what do I want? What do I need? I'll take affection. I really should mention. I need time. I need love. I crave attention.
Love My Pets, the new single by Mark Winter, available in iTunes.
Hi, this is Tim Link, host of Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio. Join me as we feature interviews with best-selling pet-related authors, award-winning writers, and journalists, and bloggers. And we'll tell stories about the animals and interesting topics about the animals in our lives. Each of the interviews will give you a first-hand knowledge about why the authors and writers chose a particular story, what the feature animals meant to them, and what has become of those animals that we've talked about. And of course, I'll also share stories from my own books, blogs, articles, and experiences. So be sure to join me and the writers and authors on Animal Rights.
Every week, on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com. Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio with Dr. Bernadine Cruz. The doctor is in and we'll see you now.
Dr. Griffith, this team that you have must be such a well-oiled machine. How many of these procedures are you doing per month, and when did this program start?
So it actually took an awful long time after I arrived at UC Davis to get the entire team together and trained. Open heart surgery is such a specialized thing that even though each member of the team is already, you know, an expert in their particular field, we required obviously me as the cardiologist and surgeon, the anesthetists, ICU clinicians and technicians to help with the procedure, all of our surgical technicians to help with the procedure. All of those people are already trained in their particular area, but the thing with open heart surgery is that it has to be an extremely tightly orchestrated procedure where we have about 10 or 15 people in the room, all of whom are doing the appropriate thing at the appropriate time, communicating with one another what they're doing, so that the entire procedure is a success. And so when I first arrived at UC Davis, the first thing that we did was actually have a training session every week for everybody on the team. And we spent a little over a year training together as a team in order that we could offer the procedure in a safe manner for clients. Now, the program, therefore, kind of officially opened at the beginning of last year, 2010 now. And we aim to do one dog a month, and that is basically because the amount of manpower that is required to do open heart surgery is an enormous drain on the resources of the hospital. And so one of the goals of the program is to gradually increase the personnel that we have in certain key areas, so that we can start offering to do more than one patient a month. But that's obviously a long-term goal, because it requires great financial support to do so.
I almost get this vision of a Indianapolis 500 race, and you see the car going into the pit, and then all of the workers jump on the car, and they're adding oil, and they're changing tires, and they're putting in gas, and that all happens before you have a chance to even blink, and the car is back out again. So I can see that, yes, this would have to be such a very finely honed team. You're talking about expense. How expensive is this?
So the cost to the client, which is actually a pretty realistic cost, it's not massively subsidized by the university or the state, ends up being somewhere between about $10,000 to $14,000, depending on the disease that the dog has and exactly what we're trying to accomplish in terms of the surgery.
These are definitely people who love their pets. Just yes. For comparison, any idea about how much this would cost if this were a person instead of a Pekingese?
Yeah, I mean, it depends. Obviously, it depends where in the world you're doing it. The interesting thing is that we actually use exactly the same equipment, all of the same disposable items that are used for humans to have the procedure done, and we actually have exactly the same machines as the med school have. But the cost in a human would be 5 to 10 times that amount. And that, largely probably reflects the fact that, human medicine has a lot more liability issues, unfortunately, associated with it.
Yes, I was going to say that, malpractice insurance. What is the success rate? And is this really a cure, or is this just literally buying the pet some time?
So I'll start with the second part of that question, because the good news is that for most of the dogs that successfully make it through the procedure and the post-op period, it is actually a cure. So the disease that we treat most frequently is a degenerative mitral valve disease, where one of the valves of the heart is actually, due to old age changes, is actually not functioning normally. And in the reports that we've published, we found that about 70% of the dogs that made it through the procedure and went home at the end of the day were cured to all intents and purposes. They no longer needed any cardiac medications. They no longer needed those drugs, the diuretics, to keep them alive. So that's the good news. The bad news is that the success rate currently is also only about 70%. And we're very
that's
honest
still
about
pretty
that.
Good. 70%
well,
is good.
It's not as good as we think it ought to be. For a similar procedure in a human, the success rate is anywhere from 95 to 99%. And honestly, the reason that the success rate is only 70%, it comes back to the need for the team to be orchestrated perfectly. And they've done studies in human medicine where they found that if a team does less than about 150 open heart procedures a year, it doesn't matter how talented those individuals are, the success rates start to drop off. And so they actually close down hospitals in human medicine if they do less than 150 cases a year. Now, you know, here we do around 10 to 12 cases a year. When I was at Colorado, the most that we ever managed was 25 cases in a year. And so it's not that surprising that our success rate is not as good as in human medicine. And the example I use for clients is, you know, all of the actors at the Royal Shakespeare Company in England know Shakespeare plays back to front and inside out and are very accomplished at doing Shakespeare performances. But if you ask them to put on a performance of Macbeth without any practice, they would make mistakes. And that's the level of cooperative work that's required to do open heart surgery successfully. And so, you know, that's the whole reason why our program is designed to try and gradually increase the number of patients that we can do each year so that we can get to the point that we can hopefully increase the success rates to what they ought to be.
I just think it is amazing what you are doing, and thank you for doing this. But I know you're also doing research because that's one of your passions, and you're doing heart valve work. This is something we hear about fairly commonly in people. Oh, yes, I had a valve replaced and they expect it to last for maybe 10 years or so, and then I'm going to go in and have to have another one done. What's your research right now? What are you looking into?
So what we're looking into in the valve research is trying to generate what's called a tissue-engineered valve. And the idea there is that we start off with some kind of physical scaffold material, and then we take the patient's cells and grow them into the scaffold so that the cells can then form a living tissue, which, because it's alive, the valves that are implanted currently are actually dead material. And so once they're implanted in you, they can't change at all. They can't grow, they can't adapt to the environment, etc., etc. The valves that we're trying to make will be living tissues, and therefore once they're implanted into the patient, they will be capable of actually growing over time in children, for instance, adapting to the pressures and physiologic environment that the heart is placing on them. And so, in theory at least, nobody has actually accomplished making a tissue-engineered valve, a fully tissue-engineered valve at this point, but in theory, if we're successful in that attempt, we could replace your valve with basically something that's as good as the original valve.
Now, I was reading some of your research, and you're talking about tissue-engineered valves, and it was saying that you're using stem cells, and I know that is such a buzzword that many people get very concerned with. They're talking about embryonic, or I know with animals at least, and sometimes with people, they're using stem cells that they're getting from a person's or a pet's fat. What's the source of your, or are you using stem cells, I should start with?
So, yeah, we are using stem cells, and we are using tissue-derived stem cells, so bone marrow predominantly, and not the more kind of controversial embryonic stem cells. For our work, at this point, it's not clear that embryonic stem cells would be necessary, and so we're, you know, sticking with the less controversial form of stem cells at this point.
It sounds like this would be expensive research. Is this being funded just through UC Davis, the state? Are there human companies that are interested in this? Because it seems like you can use this, as you're saying, for children who are going to be having to live a long life versus a dog or a cat whose lifespan is so condensed.
Right. And so, yes, I mean, the research is expensive, actually surprisingly so. And we are lucky enough to be funded by the American Heart Association at the moment. Some of our other funding comes from actually clients donating money. One of the spin-offs of what we do, I mentioned that we start out with this scaffold material and then we grow the patient's cells into the scaffold. Well, the spin-off for veterinary medicine is that we actually don't have a good valve replacement for dogs at this point in time. It turns out that the valves that are used in humans as replacement valves, all of the problems that are seen in humans with those valves are magnified dramatically in dogs. Dogs just react to those valves much, much more aggressively than humans do. And so it would be nice in certain situations for us to have a replacement valve for dogs. And if we're absolutely stuck during surgery, then we go ahead and take the risk, basically, of using the same valve replacement that they would in a human. But what we're really hoping for veterinary medicine with my research program is that the scaffold that we develop for a tissue-engineered valve for use in humans would actually be a good scaffold to make a valve for a dog in those cases that we need to replace the valve in dogs. And as you say, you know, the good news for dogs is that we don't actually need to grow cells back into that scaffold for dogs, because the scaffold on its own is going to last long enough for the dog's entire life expectancy. It's only in a human where our life expectancy is so much longer that we actually need to go to the second stage of growing your cells back into it so that it's a living tissue.
I am so proud of being a veterinarian and all the things that veterinary medicine is doing. This one world, one health, one medicine, where human medicine and veterinary medicine have really come together. And you, Dr. Griffith, just really epitomize what veterinarians are doing for pets as well as for people. Are there other facilities in the United States who are doing these types of procedures in pets, or is Davis one of the only ones, or is it the only one?
To my knowledge at the moment, Davis is the only veterinary facility that has a regularly scheduled open heart program. Colorado, I believe, still occasionally do open heart surgeries, but those are few and far between and much more sporadic than they used to be. And I think that, you know, I know that there's a couple of other institutions that have occasionally tried to do open heart surgery, but no one has actually managed to, you know, build a program that is able to offer this on a regular basis to the public as we have.
So if you want that winning Indianapolis pit crew to work on your dog or cat, it sounds like Davis is a place to go. People can go to our website, learn all about it, go to UC Davis School of Veterinary Medicine and learn about the other miracles that they're doing besides what Dr. Lee Griffith is doing. So thank you so much for being with us today, and you have taken my heart away.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you very much for having me.
And thank you for listening. One of the goals of the Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio is to allow you to be the best pet owner that you can be. So please tune in again next week, where we'll have more information to improve the life of you and your pet. Thanks for listening.
Pets can be a wonderful addition to your life. Keeping them healthy and happy is important. Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor with veterinary media consultant and veterinarian Dr. Bernadine Cruz. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets. The Pet Doctor, on demand every week, only on PetLifeRadio.com.